Now it's time for the futures.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks, welcome back to the show. Which is a lot of space news this week,
yes,
I must say.
That's right. Look up to the skies for new and interesting phenomena.
That's right. Like, for example, did you know that right now that Mark Zuckerberg is in front of the Senate?
He has been. Of course, the real issue is Cambridge Analytica as a sample of the kind of business that is in use in the internet, which is taking a service like Facebook and using it to distort opinions. And I thought one thing that was very interesting is that Mark Zuckerberg said that one of the new policies they've introduced at Facebook in the spirit of transparency is that if you click on any ad, you'll be able to see all of the ads posted by that advertiser. You'll be able to have a little bit more of a clue if an advertiser is sending different ads to different people. So that seems pretty direct in terms of addressing the Cambridge Analytical concern that they used information to micro-target persuasion ads towards specific groups.
Yeah, very interesting. Now, also, we saw a very interesting documentary I'd like to pass on this week called Do You Trust This Computer?
Which is a very interesting place to look on the web. Do you trust this computer.org?
Do you trust this computer.org? And it really delves deeply into the evolution of AI, and it really catches you up to date on the new types of AI that are coming out right now, such as the deep learning AI and the whole deep learning model and how it differs from traditional AI, the potential outcomes of where this could lead in the near future. The whole AI debate is heating up, especially as they get smarter and smarter.
Yeah, I would say that in this movie, Do You Trust This Computer, which is a very interesting documentary, it is full of very informative interviews with the leaders in the artificial intelligence field, people who develop it, people who are commenting on it, thought leaders who are talking about what kinds of concerns we need to have. The thing that I found most interesting about this is that the message is that artificial intelligence is pretty much already in charge of our world just because of how much information is being generated by computers and being shared by our connectivity, and that there's no one source. It's a classic multi-headed hydra where all kinds of different people are developing all kinds of different apps, and there's nobody in charge. Really the issue.
Yeah, we'll get to a little bit more detail ourselves soon, because I think it's really important to understand that the deep mind stuff has its limitations as well. That there are a number of limitations with respect to the those technologies.
One thing I did learn about the deep mind AI, which is, of course, Google's artificial intelligence experiment, is that the head programmer researcher started the project with an instruction to the computer of just build as many tree connections or neural connections as you can. So the DeepMind algorithm is a organizational pattern that just tries to match things up and then branch that knowledge out. And that's pretty much what the algorithm is. So when you start thinking about what is going on there, how do you regulate something that's really like throwing dice?
Pretty generic.
Yeah.
Yes. And one of the big problems with DeepMind is that it needs massive amounts of data, which uniquely suits Google, Facebook, the large companies that are constantly collecting data to really work with that aspect of technology.
Yeah.
A lot of good stuff happening out there and a few hundred miles above us. Not the least of which is NASA's new TESS.
Tess.
Tess, T-E-S-S.
Tell me about Tess.
Yeah, Tess is a friend of mine on Facebook, but...
No, but that's not the NASA Tess.
That's a different Tess. That's a different Tess, yes.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about NASA Tess.
NASA Tess is actually their...
extraterrestrial...
It's their new... It's called... Tess stands for Transiting Exoplanet Survey Satellite.
I knew she was looking for exoplanets.
Okay, she's basically a hunter for alien planets. It's a new mission, more than 10 years in the making. It could mark our first step towards discovering another planet outside our solar system.
So Tess wants to meet some aliens?
Yeah, yeah, she's ready for it. She's the one that's going to help find them. Before we get the James Webb telescope that's going to be coming after this, she is more directly oriented towards looking for exoplanets. Stephen Reinhardt, the Tess project scientist, says, quote, "We're going to be able to study individual planets and start talking about the differences between planets. The targets Tess finds are going to be fantastic subjects for research for decades to come. It's the beginning of a new era of exoplanet research."
Is she looking for planets that are close by? I mean, is she trying to identify planets that might be worth trying to...
They're trying to find planets that are near Earth.
Spaceships there.
That are near Earth, that are circling stars and then what's known as the habitable zone. You know, where water is liquid and life as we know it can be supported.
We can go sunbathing on the beach.
all that good stuff. A part of the star's orbit where liquid water could be sustained.
Definition. I think I might have to go get some liquid water right now, too.
Yeah, good idea.
Okay, I'll bring some for you.
Okay, thanks. Well, Mrs. Future gets some water. We're going to talk about water planets, yes. Tess is designed to hunt for these worlds and to find them nearby. The satellite will spend about 2 years surveying the sky for signs of planets of Earth. And nothing bigger than Jupiter, though. We don't like the really big ones because they're usually not ones we want to inhabit or necessarily be on. It's going to help us answer some really important questions, like which of our stars in the neighborhood actually has planets that we might find interesting. The nearby planets are going to be the main focus on this. They'll find these worlds by looking for small dips in the brightness of a star. That's when a planet passes between us or between the telescope and the star, or what's known as a transit. It causes a small dip in brightness of the host star. And that allows scientists to figure out the size of the planet, and they learn about its atmosphere, and they can tell what its orbit might be around the sun. All just from that little transit. Isn't that amazing? And Tess will help build upon the legacy of the Kepler Space Telescope, which was our first exoplanet hunting satellite that used the same transit method that Tess will be using. Kepler, as you may have remembered, back in 2011, changed our understanding of the galaxy because it spotted about 2,600 planets, exoplanets, orbiting stars up to 3,000 light years away.
That was over a period of several years.
Yes.
I mean, it must have discovered 1,000 just in the last year.
Well, I don't think it's operational. They had a couple of motors that failed on Kepler. Mm. Its main mission was to stare deeply into one part of the sky and keeping an eye out for worlds circling these stars. Mm-hmm. Well, Tess will survey a large part of the sky rather than just staring deeply into one part of the sky.
Oh, so we're going to find planets in every direction.
Large part of the sky with particular focus on bright ones, i.e. nearby ones. Great. Tess will also be used to help with the James Webb Space Telescope, which hopefully launches in 2020. And it just moved back from 2019 to 2020 for the launch of that. The satellite that will replace the Hubble, and it will be able to peer into the world's atmospheres to see whether or not they might be habitable and have more atmospheric study capability on the James Webb telescope. Now, Tess is particularly exciting right now, though. It's the one where planet finding will get a new boost. And planet finding as a experience never gets old.
Absolutely. So Tess is only able to spot planets based on the change in light, right? That they get
the dimmer. Transits, looking at the transit information.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's also in a clean room, so it's very, very careful not to get it polluted with too much microbes and germs. That's the big problem with space generally, is that it tends to get very dirty up there.
Space? I would have thought space is clean. It's like a big vacuum.
It's dirty because of us.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
What did we do?
We touched things. Like, for example, NASA's planning to launch the new InSight Mars lander in about a month. It's our new Mars lander that's coming up. And they have rules in the clean room as they're working on it. Like, if you sneeze, you've got to sneeze away from the spacecraft.
How maybe perfect, my timing.
Yeah, sneeze. Give us an example. Well, that too. Can't
that
do that.
That would not be allowed in the clean room at NASA.
No, you would just, well, you would have to do that away from the spacecraft.
I was going to use the mute button, but you were, you know, the timing was such that you wanted a sneeze. I feel like sneezing. I'm a little allergic to something right now.
Do you? Okay. Yeah. Well, one of the engineers that's working on the NASA InSight Mars lander said it's really important that you do not lick the spacecraft.
You'd think they wouldn't need to put that into an official warning.
Well, they did. They even made the Wired article on the topic.
Who thinks of licking spacecrafts? I've never heard of people talking about licking spacecrafts.
Well, look, it says right here. InSight cost $1 billion, although it's engineered to survive the punishing journey to Mars. It's not engineered to be licked. That's what it says.
I tell you. What's a strange branch of humans exists now that
would
even
think?
Want
to a spacecraft?
Yeah, right. Well, I guess if they want to send their DNA to another planet, I guess that's sort of a cheap way to get away with it.
Well, it's the microbes on your tongue, I think, that
telling
they're worried about.
Yeah, lick it.
Yeah, that's how the microbes travel.
They're trying to hypnotize you.
Well, you see, they have a whole coterie of scientists who's job is to make sure the Earth microbes don't end up colonizing Mars.
The beginning of the Interplanetary Customs Agency.
Yeah, and it's not just for our solar system's sake, but it's also because NASA's obligated by international treaty, that we actually have an international treaty to keep other planets clean.
Wow.
Yeah.
So we're going to start with other planets before we figure it out for Earth?
I guess so. Well, it's easier, right? All the detritus is coming from us, so
yeah, there's nobody there yet to clean up.
As far as we know.
I guess it's easier to keep it clean than to clean it up later.
This new spacecraft also is going to be looking for microbes on Mars. So it wants to be able to do that without having to think we're just finding microbes that escaped off the spaceship. And so, look, what did you discover? No, that was on the spaceship.
That's just smudge on my lens.
That's just a hitchhiker we're looking at.
Somebody licked
the spacecraft. They have a drill on this one that will go down fairly deep into the surface, below the surface of Mars, and be able to look down there. We might actually find some microbes.
That's why they call it InSight. They're going to look inside of Mars.
That's right. It'll be a little deeper space. When you
why do you think we call it a probe?
Good point. The pictures of this whole craft are quite funny. All the engineers are standing around in all white, but they give all the media visitors blue. Yeah.
Those are the ones that haven't read the training manual. They have to be kept away in case they decide to lick.
Yeah. You got to keep the blue people a safe distance away from the spacecraft. Fun fact, when a waiter scrubs your table with a circular swirls of cloth, they're really just spreading bacteria around. And with InSight, NASA tests for bacteria and gives the thing a good linear swipe up and down that physically removes the spores from the surface.
So InSight is really just a robot janitor.
Well, they have some janitors to keep it clean. This message is so clean, it's limited to just 300,000 spores on the entire spacecraft. 300,000.
And that's a small number, huh?
Yeah. If you piled all those in one place, it would probably fit on a hangnail. Now, you really got it going on this one. For some perspective, about an inch on your hand is home to about 10,000 bacteria.
Maybe on your hand. With the sneezing, I might have more.
More is more likely. And it's got extended solar panels. So you're dealing with a device that is 20 feet long. You know, that's a lot of microbes all over the whole thing. And when it settles on the Martian surface, that's when they got to...
Keep it clean, yeah.
Our probe was going to have two primary instruments. The first is a seismometer. It's wrapped in a dome that insulates and protects it from the dust storms on the planet. And it will be measuring Mars quakes.
Mars quakes.
Yeah, as opposed to earthquakes. You don't want to call them earthquakes on Mars.
A seismometer.
Mars quakes.
We could call it a seismarsiter.
You could.
What size are the Mars quakes, seismarsiter?
With this device, you'll be able to infer the composition of Mars innards from vibrations.
That sounds tricky.
We do that. We have the people involved in the oil business are use what they call seismic all the time. They create explosions and they look at the way the noise moves and it gets reflected back to the instruments. And from that, you can tell possibly where the oil is. That's one of the finding techniques. The second instrument is a really fancy thermometer. It's a thermometer that actually is on a drill. You drill down 16 feet, which is deeper than any other.
We're taking Mars's temperature.
Mm-hmm. You got to probe it. You got to drill a 16-foot deep hole.
Yeah, this is one of those thermometers that you hope you don't have to use.
And stick the thermometer in the hole.
That's right.
It will trail a cable embedded with thermal sensors every foot and a half along the length of it. And they can actually figure out what the increase in temperature is as you go down the hole. The thermal gradient is what they call it. And then from that, you can tell whether or not heat is being pushed out of the planet. And if so, how much heat is coming out. So we can extrapolate from that and get the temperature that's deeper inside the planet.
Okay, well, insight, a whole new way to look at Mars.
It is. And we know that Mars is not nearly as geologically active as our planet. Its plate tectonics, its volcanism, its earthquakes are not nearly as often as on our planet.
Mars is more calm than Earth.
Oh, way more calm. On Earth, we can't really study that very well because the crust has been recycled by plate tectonics and the mantle's been churned up by all this motion and convection currents. That's erased to the evidence of what earlier processes that formed our planet. But Mars may have retained a lot of that information, kind of like old fingerprints. So the Mars InSight probe will be measuring things like the thickness of the planet's crust and the size of its core. Then we can extrapolate from that and look at, well, what's the early history of Mars? And then extrapolate that onto other rocky planets and how they evolved.
Interesting.
Quite interesting. The biological history of InSight, the microbes on it, are important to know so that we don't confuse it with the facts of actual Martian findings that will be there. Pretty cool. It's a very interesting article on this whole topic in the latest issue of Wired. And you can find links to that on our links page, drfutureshow.com/links, the Martian InSight. I think Bruce Damer is working on that one too.
He was involved in a committee to figure out where to probe Mars, right?
Where are they going to land it? What's the location this time? Where do we want to put this?
What are they aiming for?
Should we put it down in one of the other locations? We've had our Martian rovers because they found some interesting things. Maybe they want to follow up on some of their investigations.
Some new tools. Or do we want to temperature?
Exactly. Do we want to drop it in an entirely new location? I think they do want to try to put it where there actually might have been life at one time. Mm-hmm. Evidence suggests that life on Mars might have existed 4 billion years ago, which is about the time life started on this planet. And curious enough, also when Venus went haywire about 4 billion years ago. So something happened in the solar system 4 billion years ago that really shook things up.
An unstable time in unknown history.
Yes, yeah. And so this will help us maybe figure out more about Earth history, too, by looking at the undisturbed structures of Mars at that time. Back on Earth, we have some entrepreneurs heavily looking at what can be done to make space a little bit more interesting to the average person, or the average rich person. We have the first ever luxury space hotel.
Now, I would think that would be interesting to everyone.
You think so?
I think so. It makes me think of the room at the end of 2001 Space Odyssey. That looks like a luxury space hotel. And hey, human evolution occurs there.
Yeah.
All you have to do is respond to the monolith.
I wish you had more of a view.
Well, all of the views are the same in space. You just look out on the black window and you see stars far away. Maybe a planet if you're lucky.
Yeah, that would be nice. I see more in my VR screens that are interesting.
It's probably easier than looking through a window in space. But do tell us about the luxury hotel in space. Who's making it?
Well, it's the first ever.
When's it opening?
Yeah. It was announced in Houston earlier this month, the first ever luxury space hotel at Space 2.0 Summit. Actually, it was released in San Jose. It's named after the auroras that we see near the polar skies, the Aurora Borealis. An Aurora station is being developed by Orion Span and that company's team of space industry veterans who are looking how to build a fully modular hotel. Aurora Station will operate as the first luxury hotel in space. An exclusive hotel, it'll hold 6 people at a time, including 2 crew. As a traveler, as a space visitor, you'll enjoy a completely authentic astronaut experience on a 12-day journey. And how much does this cost, you might ask, for a 12-day journey into a space hotel?
How much?
$9.5 million per person.
Oh, I see why they're taking deposits now. It's going to take a while for you to pay off that hotel bill.
They said it's stated to launch in late 2021 and to host its first guests in 2022. They have a fully refundable deposit of $80,000 per person and can be reversed online.
The new way to capitalize.
$80,000.
I'd say Tesla proved that people will give you money to develop the concept if it's fully refundable and they can change their mind later.
Yeah, that's right. You'll enjoy the exhilaration of zero gravity. You'll fly freely through the station. You'll be able to watch auroras on the Earth, both the southern and northern ones. And you'll be able to grow food while in orbit if you want to do that.
I'll tell you, this might be an argument for virtual reality, because imagine how much easier it would be to create this experience in virtual reality.
Way easier, yeah.
It's $9 million.
At $9 million, what would you spend it on?
That's right. I would definitely focus on a VR rig that would give me the feeling of weightlessness.
Right. Or a VR rig that was so real that you didn't need to go outside of your mansion that you got for a measly $5 million.
Well, I enjoy nature far too much to stay inside to play with VR.
I hear you.
But I'm just comparing it to taking a 12-day trip up to a space station. It would be fun. It would be novel. But you could do a lot here on Earth that you could simulate.
Yeah, some things you can simulate, some you can't. Just before the break here, let me just mention to this interesting piece in Futurism magazine about how NASA just sent some sperm to the ISS. To see whether or not humans can conceive in space.
Was NASA feeling a little peckish?
Yeah, they're kind of wondering whether or not you can actually get pregnant in space. They want to understand the behavior of sperm in space.
And, I see.
You know, does it swim in circles? Does it know which way to go?
So we're advertising the sperm. Who's the sperm going to if we're testing pregnancy?
Well,
don't you think the mom's a little important there? Or is it just the sperm in the capsule that you care about?
Well, they're scientists, you know.
Only the sperm's making the news.
They're scientists, you know. They'll be testing samples of human and bull semen. They want to see whether or not it will fertilize eggs that they have in what they call their glove box. They have a microgravity science glove box. This glove box is where the eggs will be fertilized.
Hmm. And there, you know, people made those sperm and those eggs.
That's true. They came from the Earth. Even though there are 6 full-grown men on the ISS right now, NASA did not ask them to contribute to this experiment in any way. Other than to study what happens. And it's important because there's evidence from early experiments that the lack of gravity might throw off sperm function.
Ah, that's the theory. Yeah. Everybody wants to know. The Mile High Club is going to become, what is it, like the 100 Mile High Club?
It could prevent fertilization.
If it's going to work.
It could be a form of birth control to have zero gravity sex.
You know what I think about that?
What?
We'll be back after a few commercials here. Dr. Future Show.
Hey, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. Hey, Ms. Future, have you ever heard of the classic science fiction tale, Nightfall?
No, I don't think I'm familiar with Nightfall.
It's set on a planet where night only falls every 2,049 years.
Hmm.
You know, one night every 2,049 years. The rest of the time it's in daylight. Isaac Asimov had written that classic piece, and it had been inspired from a conversation Asimov had with John W. Campbell, who was editor of Astounding Science Fiction magazine, regarding a quotation from the poet Ralph Waldo Emerson. And the quotation goes like this: "If the stars should appear one night in 1,000 years, How would men believe and adore and preserve for many generations the remembrance of the city of God? They're looking at the stars. Because it would seem totally miraculous.
Sure.
And according to Asimov's autobiography, Campbell's opinion to the contrary was, I think men would go mad.
Well, maybe that would tell us why.
Yeah. Well, I mention this because there's actually a real analog to this. There's a study that was done on what it would take to have a planet that only saw darkness every 1,000 years.
Uh-huh.
It would involve having 8 stars that you were nearby and a black hole. It's a very interesting article on iFuture about how this star, this Kalgash 2 star system would work so that you would only have darkness every so often, but mostly light for such a long period of time.
Uh-huh. I see. And so...
Sean Raymond, an astrophysicist at the Observatory of Bordeaux in France, he had read Nightfall when he was in college, and he loved the story, and he started questioning the scientific validity of it and see what he could calculate what it would take to create something like this.
There you go.
Yeah.
It always takes good science fiction to get an inventor to put it all together.
He ran simulations. Yeah. It's a little sci-fi idea that would do that. So if you want to know details about that, hey, you can read about his ring of sun-like stars that could be stable if there are at least 7 stars in the ring and they all have the same mass but are evenly distributed. And you know, it's crazy, but it works. And the black hole has got to be about 1,000 times bigger than the sun mass, solar masses.
And you know, far more, away.
Yeah, a little
pretty
more complicated than what Asimov had been thinking originally.
Uh-huh.
Right.
That's going to suck up all the light so that you have darkness every 1,000 years.
Yeah, pretty funny, huh?
Hey, now you're thinking.
I mostly remember the double star systems of Star Wars, where you see maybe 2 stars in the sky, and it's kind of nice.
They're beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, space art is very inspiring, looking up in the sky and seeing something as dramatic as an extra planet or an extra star.
Right.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, so let's go look at some medical news, shall we?
I will if you will.
Okay. We got a caller? Okay.
That's it's Ananda.
Good. Look to her. She's medical news for
she's
us.
She's medical news. Maybe before we start talking about
Alzheimer's.
Yeah, okay.
Let's hold on the Alzheimer's. Let's go to
Ananda for a
second.
Let's talk about something really wonderful. Okay. Ananda.
Oh, my goodness, son.
Hi. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, you beautiful people.
Oh, boy. Speaking of beautiful people, boy, when I saw you, I could not believe your energy. You seemed just radiant. I would just like to tell the audience about you a little bit. Ananda, you are a very conscious gardener and very healthy vegetarian eater and a very wise woman sage. You and Jonica, I've always seen you involved in incredible creative projects. You guys make beautiful stained glass, beautiful instruments, and you live a life that is very conscious. So you had a situation sometime in the last year where you had a medical diagnosis that was somewhat concerning. That's what we're going to talk about today, right?
Right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Tell the story.
Well, in last year, in 2017, I experienced a lot of stress. We were in between housing, staying with friends, and March 9th last year, I had pain in my ovary, and I threw up, and I went to the emergency room. Well, they discovered I had masses on both ovaries, and my blood work was elevated. My cancer antigens were raised. Normal was 0-35 and mine was 341. Well, I was referred to an OBGYN doctor. She came in and she had shorts on, UGG boots, and purple hair. And I said, oh, a doctor with purple hair. And she goes, that's me, a doctor with purple hair. She told me I had cancer. And I was in disbelief. I've been helping people over years and years and years with cancer and diseases. And I'm going, how can that be? I'm a vegetarian. I've been a vegetarian since 75. I've been a vegan since 80. I've been raw for 12 years. So she says, honey, this is not about diet. This is about stress. I was in totally disbelief. And she says, the best diet in the world wouldn't help you. This is all about stress. So we went back home and did a lot of research, and Jonica got a computer and did solid research for 2 weeks, and we developed a treatment plan.
Reducing your stress? Was that the plan? A treatment plan to get rid of stress in your life, or what?
To decrease stress, but also to do certain foods. I basically healed with food, bringing my stress levels down, and doing like ginger tea and grapefruit, hot and cold packs on my ovaries. So I've been bringing my numbers down. The last 3 visits, my cancer levels are completely gone.
Wow. They're,
you know, so now normal 0 to 35, and now I'm below normal. I'm 10. So my CA-125 is 10, and it went as high as 1,300. I went through an amazing experience because my first doctor said she wanted to operate next week. She wanted to do major surgery on me. She wanted to cut me from my sternum to my pubic bone and take out my omentum, which is the sheath that holds all your organs in place in your abdomen. And she wanted to take that out, my ovaries, and a couple of glands. And she wanted to schedule me for major surgery the following week. And I go, wait a minute. So I had time to think about it. I went to Stanford. I saw another specialist, OBGYN specialist, and he worked with me. And I said, I don't want to do chemo. I don't want to do radiation. I may consider surgery. At this point, it's been a little over a year. My right ovary has completely dissolved the mass. I have no mass. It's normal. The left ovary is shrinking. The mass on the ovary is shrinking. And my numbers are down, so my doctor says I'm special. I'm, what's the word? Extraordinary. I don't know.
In your recovery, this is not a normal
not a normal outcome from his perspective.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Right.
Okay.
I think the word was exceptional.
There you go.
But I did mostly, I did casserole packs every day, religiously. Castor oil.
Oh, castor oil packs. Okay. Religiously every day you put castor oil on your ovaries.
Yes.
On your belly.
A pad and a heating pad over top because mm-hmm. it's oily and it gets on your clothes.
Uh-huh.
I did that for a couple of hours.
I did every day,
2 grapefruits every day.
Mm.
I did hot and cold packs for like 3 or 5 minutes each. I drank coconut water, made a medicinal herbal tea, like red clover and dandelion and ginkgo and gotocola and golden seal and burdock. And I also did CBD. I would use it in glycerin. I did a teaspoon of CBD in glycerin with a whole lemon every morning.
Hmm.
And I did some juicing and absolutely raw food. I was pretty much all raw at that point.
Now, did you decide these yourself, or were these decisions based on some of the research that Jonica was doing?
Most of it was things we already knew because we've been doing this for a really long time as far as helping people with cancers and stuff. But a lot of things were new that we did, like ginger tea. Ginger is an amazing, amazing herb. And you just chop it up, take a handful, throw it in some boiling water and boil it for about 10 minutes, maybe 12 minutes, and strain it and put your sweetener in. It's wonderful.
Hmm.
And it really did help me. Grapefruit is another one. Ginger and grapefruit actually kill cancer cells.
Hmm.
They actually annihilate them.
Wow.
So I did everything I could and I walked the beach every day.
Uh-huh.
You have to keep your mental state happy and alert and positive. You can't think, oh, I'm going to die, you know.
Well,
you got to watch that inner narrative, eh?
That's great. So, Ananda, yeah. We need to go to a break right now. Maybe Al might have a question for you when we come back. Is Dr. Future Show. Stay tuned, okay? We'll be back in a couple minutes.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking to Ananda, who has been treating herself, her ovarian cancer situation with very organic.
Yeah, very holistic food-based approach and a daily habit that involves low stress, using comfrey packs and lots of ginger, lemon, grapefruit, etc.
You're kind of already living a pretty organic, healthy lifestyle, Ananda. So what do you think the breakthrough was here? What's the big takeaway from having to deal with cancer like this?
Well, trying to figure out how to deal with my mental, my stress. I worked on my physical and my diet for so long, but I never worked on the mental aspect of stress, having to get something done or be somewhere or plan this event or whatever it is in my life. I don't do it calmly. I try to do it calmly, and I thought, was shocked that I had this. So my approach was be calmer. Just let things be the way they are and just get a little bit more stress-free.
Well, I am really happy that you figured it out. You have always been somebody I just think is amazing, and this just goes to prove it. I'm so happy for you. Wow. Good on you. I'm so glad.
Yes. Thank you guys so much. And yeah. I've known you guys for 25 years, and I am just enthralled that we are still as good friends as we were way back in the day, loving each other and inspiring each other. You're the most inspiring people I know in Santa Cruz.
Oh, bless your heart. Thank you.
Yeah, well, thanks for your update. And keep us posted as things keep evolving.
I will.
All right.
I was looking for good tips.
Thanks for sharing your secrets. I'm sure it's going to inspire a lot of people to look within to take care of their health, which I really do try and be a cheerleader for. Good job.
Thank you. Yeah. Cancer is Curable Now is a wonderful video. There are videos out there that people can tune into to help themselves. So I just want to impart that.
All right. Thank you so much, Ananda. We'll see you, see you next time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bye, sweetie.
Much love to you both.
Thank you.
Love to you.
Me too. All right. So that was really something.
Yeah, inspiring.
Yeah.
To know we can... Our friends
Life
are making progress.
Life will succeed.
Right, here
Life finds
town.
A way.
Right. The tweet just came in from Ed Snowden, of all people.
Really?
See what Ed has to say here.
Oh, come on.
No, really. No, this is a tweet.
Oh, right? it's a tweet.
It says, before you read or watch Facebook CEO testifying today, that's Mark Zuckerberg, you need to read this. He's not sorry. Every activity we've seen from this company is part of the same unbroken strategy of deception.
Oh, I guess Ed Snowden doesn't like Facebook.
Yeah.
Huh.
As we all listen to the CEO testifying, Zuckerberg, as he apologizes to Congress for the umpteenth time, it's important to remember that Facebook's leaking user data isn't new or an accident. There you go.
Well, I tell you, the Facebook Cambridge Analytica scandal is just the poster child for what's going on. If you really want to have a well-rounded conversation about the future of data and human beings and their data, this is a pimple on a teenager face here. What's really going on is that the stock market is an AI, and the power grid is an AI, and the groceries being delivered, in fact, the entire Amazon ecosystem of buying and selling and everything going on the internet, including anybody posting a website, is actually the most important thing going on. And it's just a free-for-all zone.
Audrey Reagan tweets, one can only hope that Zuckerberg is more loyal to his country than you ever were, Ed Snowden.
There you go. Well, there are those who do try and collect and abuse their power and have a lot of power over others. But in the end, what succeeds is what serves humanity and what serves the most people with the ability to lead their lives in a way that is unencumbered and that they like living. Pursuit of happiness. That's still what's guiding the people of this country for the most part. We should start having more belief in our ability to make things better as we learn what's in front of us, one step at a time. What's yours to do, what's mine to do, is what we know how to do. And spending all this energy trying to crucify people who we barely understand their role is just obscuring the fact that good people always need to improve reality as much as they can.
Paul Mills says, Zuckerberg is a self-confessed expert in human psychology and behavior. He looks alien in interviews as he appears to be trying to control his body language and eye movement. It's really bizarre to watch him.
Yeah, he is pretty bizarre.
Bizarre, yeah. People are agreeing with that. And Bex says, to make that kind of money, you have to not care about anything but money.
Oh.
Not family, not others, not country,
but
money.
Yeah, what qualifies that person to be an expert?
He knew what he was going on, but he didn't care about the country because he stands to make millions.
Can we not say stuff like this? This is troll comments. I really feel that you should express your opinions if you have them and don't just repeat troll opinions.
Well, he can't be sworn in before Congress. I think that he is trying. I like that. There's just so much.
I think that the younger generation is on trial by the older generation, personally. And I think the older generation is much more, what do I like to say? That the fruits that we see today are from the seeds that were planted decades ago. And the people who are grilling Facebook are coming from a paradigm where they have engaged in all kinds of manipulative behavior, and they're in a Congress that doesn't seem to care about the good of the people, and they're grilling a 30-something who has been swept up in the invention of our lifetimes, which is the wild, wild web. They're trying to turn it into a McCarthyist grilling when they're just not even grokking that inventors don't know what they're creating until they get feedback from it. So I just felt like what I heard from the interviews was two different paradigms that were failing to communicate.
Yeah, they're talking at each other rather than to each other.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of which, that's the context. The context really determines how well we understood these things.
Oh, I just realized we've got a couple of people on.
Okay, well, let's get them. We've got a couple of minutes.
Yeah, we've got a couple minutes left.
Let's get our callers in.
Okay. Hi, Billy Sunshine. Thanks
hey, Billy.
For calling in.
Yeah, I just want to say thanks for the show, as always. You guys are great. And I don't want to troll Zuckerberg, but I'd like to troll Congress just for a second. That's my response was saying, what can these people who just are looking for publicity for themselves, who don't understand anything, why are they questioning this guy, this poor guy somewhere on the spectrum, by the way? It's Congress that's...
I hear him say very intelligent things, like the question you're asking could be better answered by someone who's an expert in that, and I'm just the CEO of the company. Why don't I let you talk to them? And they're acting like he's avoiding the question.
Yeah, exactly. Really, if there's someone who's incompetent, it's Congress. Now, whether or not Facebook could do more to protect us and make a little less money, of course. But, gee, watching Congress ask anybody anything anymore is just ridiculous.
It's embarrassing.
It is. Yeah. Right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks
for the call. Thanks for calling.
All right.
Yeah.
Now we have, hey, Mickey, time for a quick comment before the end of the show. Yep. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, you closed the show with us.
30 seconds.
Yeah.
So give us a thought for the future.
Oh, okay. Here's what I always say. If you want to know the right answer, ask the right question.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Thank you. Everybody should remember that. You want to find out what's going on.
That's the correct question.
All right.
You only have a minute, right? I can't say anything else.
About 30 seconds now. Oh, there goes their music. Here it comes. All right, so help say goodbye to everyone, Mickey.
Okay, and could you say who was on before and her email, the girl that was on before?
Ananda.
Yes.
Send it to future@ksco.com.
Yes, send us a request. future@ksco. We'll put you in touch with her.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. Bye, guys.
All right. Bye-bye. And thanks again, folks, for listening to the Dr. Future Show. Actually, Dr. and Mrs. Future Show.
KSCO, talk to you all Santa Cruz. We'll see you next week.